열어봤어.
도보로리가 토킥 투미 라디오 다다다다다다.
Welcome, 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 geeks and nerds, girls and boys, to another brand new edition of Geek to Me Radio. Tonight, we have comic book legend Roy Thomas, the successor and heir apparent to Stan Lee. We'll talk about a lot of different things Marvel related, including what he liked best about Marvel Cinematic Universe's Phase 4. Plus, Nick Zano and Shelley Hennig join us to talk about Obliterated on Netflix. All that and more, stand by.
We're talking TV, comics and movies, and video games. Star Trek from Star Wars, we'll try to explain. There are 12 doctors, 4 Hogwarts houses, 1 ring rules them all. To be the greatest Pokemon master, you must catch them all. You must catch them all. Try to catch them all. Gotta catch them all. Gotta catch them all.
And for those of you who might be driving around the greater St. Louis area on this Christmas Eve, hello to all of you. Maybe you're listening at home while you wrap the last minute Christmas presents before the big day tomorrow. We appreciate you finding us there. This is a pre-recorded show. We are not live, but it is a brand new show because, again, I don't like to leave my listeners with a best of. So a brand new show and our 390th show. We are just 10 away from 400, I'm going to start planning now to make sure I've got something absolutely wonderful for the big 400th show. Stay tuned for that. If you're hearing us after the fact in the podcast form, maybe it's after Christmas and you're listening to this. Hopefully Santa brought you everything you wanted for Christmas. If not, go out and get it yourself. That's my motto. With that said, we're going to dive right in. We got to record this interview earlier this year, and it's another one of those things I thought I'd lost, but there it is, my interview with Roy Thomas. Here we go. So we're back at Planet Comic Con. Once again, this is round two with Roy Thomas. Thanks for your time today.
Well, glad to be here. You know, Missouri is my home state, even though I never got to Kansas City until, I don't know, 20 or 30 years ago. I'd never been to Kansas City, never got that far west, you know.
And now they can't get enough of you. They keep asking you back.
Well, it's very nice. Well, I like excuse to come to Missouri. I have two sisters still in the Midwest, you know, one in Osage Beach, Missouri, and one in Des Moines, Iowa. That'll be here in the next, you know, day or two. So it's nice to get together, you know, with them. And a couple other people here and there. And, you know, very nice to just, you know, travel a little bit, you know, make a little money, have a little fun, get away from the farm for a few days, you know.
And you've been traveling quite a bit. I noticed, like, because John's great about putting your itinerary up online and making sure, you know, all your stuff is getting out there on social media. You're incredibly active. And I'm assuming that, you know, after a while, you would think, I kind of want to take some time off. You don't show any sign of slowing down, though, so I'll ask, what's your secret to your vim and vigor?
No, actually, it's probably that about 30 years ago, on a kind of a whim as much as anything, my wife and I decided to buy this, can't call it a farm exactly, but it's really, it's like a 40-acre estate or whatever it is, with a couple of houses and a pool and so forth. And we brought a lot of animals in. It had no fencing or animals. We brought them in. We have, you know, Scottish Highland cattle and goats, donkeys. We had some capybaras for a while, dogs, different things. And I have to take care of the feeding of those and help my wife with a little yard work and so forth. So I don't get a chance, even as much as I want to sit in the basement and just in my office, which is the bottom floor of the house, and just sit at the word processor, as they used to call it, the computer, which, does that term still even exist anymore?
I know it, so yeah, it must.
Yeah, but it's almost obsolete now.
Right.
But anyway, I don't get a chance probably to do my own natural proclivities, which would be to sit there and just type all day long or read or, you know, watch an occasional something. But I also have to keep active. I'm, 82, you'll be 83 at the end of the year. So, my knees have gone back to not being too good like they were when I was young. Right now I've got a kind of a sore shoulder and 20% eye shot in one eye. My right side, for some reason, seems to be going faster than the left one. I don't know.
We need a $6 million man reconstitution of the right side.
Like, I think I'm more like a $250,000 fan at this stage. But, no, but you know, that keeps me lively and so forth. My wife, in addition to all her other things, she makes sure my diet is at least half the time or so is fairly good. Feeds me, you know, a lot of broccoli and stuff like right. that I would never touch on my own. And, you know, the combination of that, you know, keeps me, you know, just running around, climbing. I have to, you know, climbing over fences, dodging cattle horns and things of this sort, dragging around 50-pound bags of feed and so forth. You know, I avoid it as much as I can, but I have to do enough of it that it's probably good for me, you know.
Yeah, moving
really,
around the exercise.
Yeah.
A body in motion stays in motion.
Right.
And I know last time we were here, we ended our conversation talking just briefly about Star Wars, which you oversaw, and that Jim Shooter even said how Star Wars pretty much saved Marvel at the time. Is that kind of your assessment as well, is that had it not been for Star Wars, we don't know what would have happened?
Actually, I have to totally credit Jim Shooter for saying that, because I didn't know it. I mean, I knew it had been good for them, but it was Jim, and to a lesser extent, his... the publisher, in one or two cases, Jim Galton, who was the publisher at the time. Jim Galton, a friend of mine who was in academic publishing, called Jim Galton about 15 years ago on some business matter. He didn't, you know, it had nothing to do with comics. It was all academic publishing. And he was talking to Jim Galton, and Galton mentioned he had been publisher of Marvel Comics. And my friend Matthew Broccoli, who was an eminent scholar on Fitzgerald and so forth at the University of South Carolina, said, I know, you know, former editor-in-chief of Marvel writer Roy Thomas. He says, say hello to Roy. He says, he made me rich.
Wow, that's
and,
nice.
Which basically be what it really is, what his and he and Jim say, which I did not know, and I'm happy that they made it public, is that by sheer coincidence, which had nothing to do with... anything from George Lucas to me, nobody really knew Star Wars was going to be a hit. Nobody knew that Marvel was going to make a lot of money out of the comic books and so, or anything like that. Nobody knew much of anything. We took a flyer on it. It turned out to work out really well and got Marvel through a kind of a difficult period. Maybe bought them a couple of years to, at a time when the market was not going so well, gave them some extra money to play around, reposition themselves, and help them maybe stave off... dissolution. But again, in my case, it was just a dumb lucky guess of Lucas's guy Charlie Lippincott approaching me, suggesting the idea, selling me on the idea, and my selling myself on the idea, and then my getting Stan's okay somewhat reluctantly, and Galton's even more reluctantly, the next thing you know, it turned out to be, you know, a lifesaver. The funny thing is it ended up making almost nothing, no difference at all to the Star Wars movie,
right,
which it had been intended to help. It didn't hurt it, but it didn't make much difference, you know. It maybe got a few people to go to the movies, but I think it opened pretty big with that. They didn't rely on Marvel. Yeah. But on the other hand, it meant a lot to Marvel, which had not wanted to do the comic at all. I don't know if I had mentioned it last year, but up till a couple of weeks before the movie opened, my friend Ed Summer, who had been the one who had introduced Lippincott to me, and who was a silent partner with Lucas in his comic book and art store in New York, was walking around the halls of Marvel doing some business, and the circulation director walked up to him and was complaining because, you know, Lucas and his man had sold me, and then I had sold Marvel and doing this book, and it was coming out and so forth, and they didn't know much about sales yet, but they said, you know, he says, this thing is going to be a bomb. You know, we're going to take a bath on it. That was the exact expression. And so he said, we're going to take a bath. They took a bath in money is what they took.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding.
And finally, they even got around to paying me a few $100, you know, extra for my work on it. Although I never made anything out of Star Wars besides a regular rate that was worth anything until Marvel got the rights back a few years ago because of Disney. And then they started putting out these big omnibus things. And then I started finally making a little money out of Star Wars, which took about, 40 years?
Right. You know? A long time investment, I guess.
Yeah, long time investment. But I'm happy to have been a little minor part of Star Wars and a part of Marvel in another way. You know, that was my job, was to make money for Marvel. Sometimes I did, sometimes I didn't. But in this particular case, it dwarfs even the Conan that I brought or the comics I wrote. Probably Star Wars was... in many ways, the most important thing I did for Marvel. And, of course, it really wasn't me at all. It was just an editorial decision that I managed to push through and got lucky on. Got lucky for me, got lucky for Marvel.
Yeah. And with all the other stuff you've done, I noticed we didn't get to talk about it at great length last time, was your extensive run on the Avengers. Mm-hmm. But you've worked on Invaders. You worked on, obviously, over DC Justice Society. Your major at SEMO was history. Was that kind of your way to kind of bring your love of history into the comic books by saying we've got all these great World War II characters both in Marvel and DC and kind of looking at it, or was it just happenstance?
Yeah. Well, my interest in history goes back to, you know, from when I was a kid on, I was always interested in history. And I was always interested in comics, so it's only a natural thing to combine the two. In particular, while I like history, and I, you know, in some ways that even underscored my thing in Conan, because although Conan is not a historical character, the Conan world is made up of all sorts of different periods of history lumped together, medieval and ancient, whatever Howard felt like plucking out of the time period. And that was part of the reason I enjoyed doing it as opposed to doing another superhero book. And also, I had just developed a kind of an interest in World War II. You know, I was born in 1940, so I grew up right at the end of World War II. I don't have any memories of it particularly, except, you know, vague, you know, things. I remember sitting on the floor or something with my parents discussing something about the atomic bomb blast in the newspaper when I was pushing five, and that's, you know, and I used to draw pictures of World War II airplanes when I was 5 or 6 years old and things like that. But, you know, and an uncle came home from the war and he gave me a hand grenade. You know, I mean, it wasn't armed, but it was a full hand grenade, nice, light blue, heavy, and I would just throw it at anything I could, and not even thinking about what damage I might have done, you know, and so forth. But I just was always interested because war is one of the few things that human beings do well together, you know?
Unfortunately,
they don't play well together, but they make war pretty well together. So the idea of a whole world at war and involving the superheroes, first of Marvel, then of DC, in it, since that was also the time at which these characters came to their initial good fruition. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, everything came about from the immediate pre-war period of 1938 with Superman through, you know, the early war years with Wonder Woman and these characters and the Human Torch, and all of them were either immediately pre-war or during the war. So I thought it was just a natural thing to want to do more stories, for me, to do want to do more stories in that genre, so I did.
And you've got, I know, a lot of credits under your belt. We talked about last time how you've created half the Marvel Universe with all these characters you've either co-created or worked on.
15%, I don't know, whatever.
We'll call it 35, we'll split the difference.
All right.
But I know they just had, for the Marvel Cinematic Universe, we got to see Werewolf by Night and Man-Thing in the same show. That must have been a treat for you to see that. I mean, that's...
Yeah. Now, a couple of people have told me this other character is supposed to be the zombie, but I don't know about that. But it was nice to see... The plot of that story was a little weird, but I loved the idea of the werewolf, and I loved, and the man thing even more, the idea of the man thing shambling around. I sure hope they do more with that. My only regret is that my major, what I think of as the best of my horror-related creations, was Morbius. And while he was excellently played by Leto, and the movie was, I think, better than its critics have said, but the fact remains, the people doing the movie, not Leto himself, but the people doing the movie misunderstood Morbius so much that in some ways they sabotaged the movie before they ever got started because they didn't understand that Morbius is a tortured living vampire. So what do? They have him drinking artificial blood that he's created. No, Morbius has to be tortured because he's drinking human blood. They wanted to give him an easy out so he isn't drinking human blood.
Yeah.
And in so doing, they destroyed the character and they took away his reason for existing. And that plus other things just undercut the movie. And I'm really sorry that Morbius, because he's part of the Sony universe, probably wouldn't be able to mix it up with Man-Thing and all the other characters. It was really weird because I didn't like horror comics. I never read horror comics. I was a kid at the young teenager at the height of EC Comics, Tales from the Crypt and all that, but I never bought any of them, not a one, because I just didn't like horror comics. They gave me the creeps. I knew they were, I could look page through them and see they were well written and well drawn, but I never bought them. But when I got to Marvel, suddenly the idea of writing or having a part of Dracula or Frankenstein, and then characters building off that, be it the Living Mummy or the man thing or whatever the characters were really appealed to me, and I had a lot more fun creating horror characters than I ever had reading them.
You're in control. I guess that takes kind of the scary element out of it at some point. Since
yeah.
You're
yeah. Well, I still don't like reading horror comics that much. I mean, I have a complete collection, of course, of reprinted ECs now and hundreds of other horror comics that have been reprinted, especially by PS Art Books from England.
Oh, yeah.
Over the last few years, they've done several hundred. In fact, I helped them with a bunch. We reprinted the complete Dick Briefer, Frankenstein, and The Heap, and a couple of other characters like that, continuing monster characters, and I like that, but I don't know, my focus was always on the continuing character, and that's why, well, while DC in the 70s went for the House of Mystery story with very little in the continuing,
right? Yeah,
even Swamp Thing started out not really to be a continuing feature, it was just a one shot that they turned into one. But even though Marvel had Tower of Shadows and a couple of anthology titles, Marvel's orientation by that time was toward the character. So from the very beginning, it was going to be Dracula and Morbius and Werewolf by Night, and not individual werewolf stories. And that I could get behind. The other stuff, those other books, the Tower of Shadows kind of thing, House of Mystery, that never interested me as a reader, and it would have bored me as an editor to have to work on them very much. I'd have given that to Archie Goodwin. He liked that kind of thing.
Right, you know? Yeah.
But I didn't like it much.
And with all these characters you've worked on, everything like that, one of the things we've seen is Phase 4 of Marvel has kind of played itself out. Is
did it ever play itself in?
I was going to ask you about this.
That was the least. I mean, after they had done such a good job, they really lost their way. But you know, nobody has an all-winning thing. The problem, I think, with Marvel now, and of course, I'm very much in their corner. I love their movies. I'm a big supporter. I even get some money from them. So I really want to see them be successful. But if they think that some future phase of Marvel is going to be as good without them having in it an Iron Man, a Captain America, a Thor, a decent, not Professor, Hulk,
right.
They're crazy. It's not going to happen. Ms. Marvel ain't going to make it. Ironheart ain't going to make it. They'll be okay, but they are not going to regain. What they need to do is to find a way to bring back Iron Man, whether with Robert Downey Jr. or not. Captain America, forget about the Falcon with stars and stripes on him. Mm-hmm. The Falcon's a great Falcon. He's not Captain America, as far as I'm concerned. I think they've kind of lost their way, and I don't know if they're going to get it back, but I sure hope they do. I'm rooting for it because I've really liked some of the movies, but the last couple of years have not been kind to the Marvel cinematic legend, and I want to see that change, you know.
You mentioned, you said the cohesive character storyline throughout is one of the things Marvel had done, and we had that in Phases 1 through 3. We knew what they were building up to. I don't know if Phase 4 was just like, let's throw some stuff at the wall, let's have a kind of a rebuilding phase like baseball teams go through, but was there something in Phase 4 that did strike you, be it She-Hulk was really good, Loki was really good, was there anything you really thought was...
We're going to take a quick commercial break. We come back, we'll talk more with Stan Lee's heir apparent, Roy Thomas, the man behind all the cool stuff now being seen in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We'll get his answer to that question right after this. Please stand by.
Well, hi there, sugar. This is Lenore Zan, Rogue. And I am coming to you from Geek to Me Radio.
Welcome back to the show. Geek to Me Radio, heard here every Sunday on the Big 550 KTRS. Yes, every Sunday, even this Sunday, Christmas Eve. Hopefully you got out and got all the cool things, all the gifts and everything. If you're local, hopefully you got a gift card for someone from Bugs Comics and Games, or maybe you're listening to this after the fact and it's past Christmas and you've got a gift card to Bugs Comics and Games. Lucky you is all I have to say. Head out there and talk to Larry. Let him know what you're looking for. He'll point you in the right direction. He has all sorts of comics, from new comics, back issues, Golden Age, Western comics, anything you could want, he's got it. Spider-Man, Batman, Marvel, DC, Iron Man, Image Comics, Boom Comics, Valiant Comics, whatever it might be, he's got it. And if he doesn't have it, ask him. He can order it for you. I was just out there on New Comic Book Day this past Wednesday, and people came in and said, hey, could you add this to my pull list? He's like, yeah, I don't order that one, but I can get it for you. So if you're looking for a comic, let Larry know. He can get you that comic. Hopefully you're enjoying the new Transformers series, or maybe you're liking the new Daredevil Black Armor that's out from Marvel. A lot of good stuff out there that's coming out. And of course, if you're looking for back issues, he's got them all over the place. Boxes and boxes and boxes of back issues, which to my mind, that's what really makes a comic book store. You gotta have back issues. Of course, if you are in the greater St. Louis, St. Charles area, you just pop right out there off of Bryan Road in O'Fallon, Missouri, and check out his collection. If you're not, well, hit up Larry on Instagram, Bugs Comics and Games, or on Facebook. Look for Bugs Comics and Games on Facebook. Give the page a like. Follow him on Instagram. He's posting stuff all the time that you can buy. That way you can make Bugs Comics and Games your local comic book store, no matter where you are. Maybe your comic book store closed down. Maybe it's not around anymore. Maybe you're looking for a new place to get your comics. Let Bugs Comics and Games be that new store. Check them out again on Facebook, Bugs Comics and Games, or on Instagram. Give them a like and a follow there. Instagram, Bugs Comics and Games, and is spelt out. And make them your new comic book store. Very proud to have them as our official comic book store here on Geek to Me Radio. Speaking of comics, we've got Roy Thomas, one of the biggest masterminds, second only to Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, with what went on at Marvel. He kind of shepherded it into the 70s and 80s, really had his hand in the pie, was editor, wrote a lot of stories. And so, of course, when we're talking to him, we asked him what he liked most about MCU's, that's the Marvel Cinematic Universe's, Phase 4.
I liked a lot of, I liked She-Hulk fairly well. I mean, there were things about it I didn't like, but I actually liked She-Hulk. I mean, I know it had a lot of bad publicity about it. Obviously, I think Morbius was a great character in search of a better movie. Mm. I thought the Shang-Chi movie was pretty good. It brought a lot of fantasy elements that had nothing to do with anything in the comic book. It was almost combining elements of Shang-Chi with the Iron Fist type of stuff that that I had helped create. Yeah. But it's not that the characters aren't good at everything. You know, I think a lot of those characters are good. Well, I don't know about the Eternals. I mean, that movie
that was a rough one.
That was a mess. I mean, they made so many wrong choices. I'm sorry, Ajax is a man. He's not a woman. I'm in favor of all sorts of women characters. I'm in favor of minority characters. I've invented more than the average person.
Yes, you have.
Over the years, from Hans and Luke Cage or whoever, but I don't think that those characters should be brought in to replace the other characters. I think they should just be a second wave. So you've got the Falcon, but don't make him Captain America. It's too late to do that, but I still think it was a bad idea. They bring back Iron Man. Don't worry about trying to make him into a woman. I think it was a mistake. It seems like everybody now has to be a woman. I mean, even Black Panther becomes a woman. And any one of them is fine. Any several of them is fine. We need more women, strong women characters. We don't need 6 or 7 out of 8 characters all being women. That is not. First of all, Disney bought Marvel, and they said so because they wanted to. They felt they had the princess market with the little girls with all the movies, and they wanted the boy market. They got the boy market, and are proceeding to try to turn it into a girls market or something. And I think that they need to get back to basics and so forth, because they obviously knew what they were doing for those first several years. I think they've lost their way a little for the last couple of years, but none of us is perfect. They can find it again, but they've got to accept. They've just got to recognize they did a lot of things wrong the last 2 or 3 years. I don't know if I would have done it better. Nobody was asking me,
right?
Because I have such admiration for Kevin Feige and the job that he's done over the years. But nothing lasts forever. But Marvel isn't necessarily over just because they had 2 or 3 bad. There were some lousy Tarzan movies. There were some lousy and many, many lousy James Bond pictures. Everything Roger Moore ever made to me was a lousy James Bond picture.
Well, we'll have to fight if we're talking about The Spy Who Loved Me. That's one of my favorites.
All right, I like the song.
Carly Simon. You can't go wrong with Carly Simon.
Can't go wrong with Carly Simon. But anyway, I just think they need to get back to basics, and they'll do fine, and I want them to do it. I want them to, I was overjoyed to hear, for example, they were maybe going to bring Ultron back. I'm pleased to see this, because I've been wanting that for the last, 10 years. I want to see, they should try to keep Thor in it if he's willing to stay. They should keep Ant-Man around.
He seems like he wants to.
Yeah, and they should keep those people around. Have the Hulk go primitive again. Forget this Professor Hulk crap, And, find a new Iron Man off in another dimension. You know, they find everything else in another dimension. Why can't they find another Tony Stark?
Or James Rhodes, just go ahead and put him in the Iron Man armor. That's, you know.
At the very least, they could do that. Yeah, that would be the next best thing. And Captain America, they could, you know, find another Captain America, something like that. You know, it might or might not work well, but I don't think that these radical changes and suddenly amounts to killing off characters. They have not got anything. They haven't got a strong enough bullpen to back up. You can't. It's like, you know, killing off Babe Ruth, replacing you with some rookie. It's not necessarily going to work out well. It might, but you're taking a real risk.
Huge
and
risk.
The odds are against you.
And switching gears to DC, because you worked with them quite a bit too,
and
their movie front has been a bit of a mess. Mm-hmm. They've had a couple of standouts, like Wonder Woman was brilliant. Mm-hmm. I liked Ben Affleck as Batman.
The second Wonder Woman was awful.
It was awful.
And the first one was one of the best of the superhero movies. Yeah. It was up there with the best of the Marvel movies. I couldn't believe the same team basically did the second one. It was almost like something went wrong, they left, and somebody else came in and took their identities, stole their identities and made this second. I could barely finish watching it, and I just loved the first movie.
And then The Batman with Robert Pattinson, which I was pleasantly surprised.
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah. Oh, you haven't seen it yet?
No, I will.
It reminds me of the Englehart and Rogers run from the 70s in a lot of ways, so in Detective Comics, which I love.
Yeah.
But I know that James Gunn and Peter Safran have announced a whole new slate of changes.
Yeah.
Did you see anything that they announced that you were like, oh, I'm really excited about that, Commandos or anything? Or?
I haven't really paid that much attention.
Okay.
You have to give credence to a guy like James Gunn who managed to turn Guardians of the Galaxy into one of the great hits of the last decade or so. You know, you can't ignore anybody. The thing is, the horrible thing, I only see, you know, reflection of this, but the horrible thing about, one of 3,500 horrible things about social media is that everybody gets on there with his little opinion, and they know that either that James Gunn's doing wonderful things, they know he's going to do lousy things, and they don't really know crap. You know, they're just on there, they're just shooting off their mouths.
Yeah.
And because they have a better tool now than we had 10 or 20 years ago, I had a little fanzine I ran off.
Right.
And they could get on and spread the word out to, you know, all over the place, you know, and so forth. But it doesn't mean they have anything worthwhile to say. It simply means they have a megaphone.
Right.
And, I think that, you know, probably just like Kevin Feige has had to for the last decade or so, I think Gunn just has to ignore them, do the best that he can, and if there was some way to neutralize these people so they couldn't be bad-mouthing you so much, and because they bad-mouth the movies so much sometime in advance that they practically poison the well, you know, for the movies.
Yeah.
And the movies should stand or fall on their own merit, not what some guy in his parents' basement is typing out.
And I love, because, again, John...
This will probably get me canceled, but what the hell, I don't care.
I don't think
you know?
So. I don't.
I'll go back to my farm and feed my cattle, you know. I don't need this, you know.
But I will say, if Kevin Feige or James Gunn get to see this, you might want to hire somebody who has some know-how in the business. I'd say you'd be available to consult.
They had a thing on last night, Chris Claremont, Simons, and other... It was on thing, doing several segments, 60-year anniversary of Marvel, but didn't bother to ask me to be on. I'm the closest person who was actually close to being there 60 years ago because I came in, because 60 years of Marvel would be, 2061.
Yeah.
Or 60, okay, 20 and so forth. I came there in 1965. It's almost 60 years ago.
Yeah,
but they didn't bother, you know. I mean, I'm okay. I don't need it, but, you know, I just think sometimes they can be a little short-sighted. I have no great desire to write Marvel movies or, you know, and only a handful of Marvel comics. If they didn't offer me the right Marvel comic, I wouldn't even be interested in that.
Yeah.
I'd love to do the right one, but I wouldn't be interested in just doing any of them because it would be more trouble than it would be worth to me. The problem is when I get over something like Marvel these days, and I'm kind of happy to do it. I got a couple of Conans and one or two other things, and there was a couple of X-Men with the Wolverine things got to do recently. That was kind of fun. The problem is they always offer me something that's a couple of issues. I always was oriented toward the monthly comic book. If somebody gives me something that's two issues or even three or four issues long, by the time I really get interested in it, it's over.
Yeah.
So therefore, what I've found now is it's hard to get interested in the first place because I know I don't hit... It's not a long-term commitment.
Sure, you can't carry...
A two-month commitment, two comic books... A few $1,000s, it doesn't mean anything to me. It doesn't mean anything in terms of money. It doesn't mean anything in terms of commitment. So therefore, you know, it's very hard to keep awake while I'm typing it, although I still have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
But if I had a longer-term commitment, I could really you know, sink my teeth into it. But one or two issues, you know, forget it, you know.
I mean, I'm trying to be cognizant of your time, too, because I know we've got to get you over to the convention.
We've got time. It's only 2023. Yeah, okay. We've got plenty of time. Unless my watch has stopped.
No, I was looking at the time right there, but it looks like we're okay still. Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Conan, obviously, you mentioned that was your baby. You had a lot of fun with that one. And I know Marvel had the rights where I think they recently lost it because we saw Conan in the recent Savage Avengers that David Pappos was writing. And now, I guess, the rights have gone. Do you know where the rights are with that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the... I guess I don't know what's come out yet, but the thing is, I don't know if Marvel didn't try to keep their rights, or they just felt it wasn't worth paying what, you know, somebody else made a better offer, and Marvel didn't feel it was worth keeping. I'm sorry they didn't, partly because maybe I'd have got a chance to write a couple more Conan stories, but more for the reprints. I liked seeing my stuff get reprinted. I got nice little checks for those, and I love seeing my work and the work of the artists I worked with preserved between hard covers, and they had got just about all the way through Conan the Barbarian, but they were all the way through Savage Sword. I had a lot of work in the 90s. I was looking forward to seeing that. You know, it wasn't as important as the 70s stuff, but it was still nice. And then other things that came through, because Marvel had that property for about almost exactly 30 years. At some stage, they just decided they didn't want it enough to pay whatever Conan Properties wanted, so Conan Properties sold their entire, that being this Swedish concern, sold their entire rights to this place called, it's now called Heroic Signatures, and they have a deal with Titan Books that does things. So I guess they're going to be doing the comics. The weird thing is they're going to be reissuing the same omnibus material in these 800,000-page books that Marvel's been doing, just changed enough to take off the word Marvel and to remove a few things that are so Marvel-oriented they can't reprint them. But they're going to be putting out these reprint books only 3 or 4 years after Marvel put out virtually the same material. Huh. That's a little strange. I wish them good luck with it, but, I think that Conan is a thing that somehow or other it had its moment in the 60s and the 70s, and by the early 80s, once the movies were over, so forth, it just kind of died down but there's one thing about Conan now is that he would be considered a male chauvinist pig. So a lot of groups, women, but other groups too, are going to be against him simply because he's got too much testosterone, and they're going to find him an offensive character, toxic masculinity. Conan is he's a little bit of toxic masculinity, but he's also a little more than that. He also is the result of a master storyteller with massive talent, not me, Robert E. Howard, and the rest of us doing decent work with him, but mostly of Howard. And it's a shame because I think Conan is a character that a lot of good things can still be done with. And I would have loved, I had a lot of things that I wanted to do with it. I tried to sell Marvel on, and I've mentioned it to the Titan people who at one stage said they'd love to do something with me, but except for maybe doing an introduction to a book, I haven't seen anything concrete from that. I would have liked to. I wanted to do a series about old Conan.
Oh yeah.
At the age of 60 or 70, still in pretty good shape. Robert E. Howard, not too long before he died, wrote a letter to some fans that contacted him, saying that he saw Conan as eventually renouncing his throne and sailing off to the west and discovering new lands there. Obviously, being the Hyborian Age equivalent of the Americas, which would have had a different shape if we can judge by the Hyborian world. And I had a lot of ideas on that. It would be like a civilization there, but based on a combination of what we think of as Native American, American Indian models combined with Maya, Inca, different societies, as different as the African and European type communities are and the Asian ones in the Hyborian world. And I think that could have been a nice new way for Conan to go, but instead they just stuck in the Avengers where 9 out of 10 superheroes would actually make mincemeat out of them in a second. The whole problem is, the whole thing about Conan is he's a human being. He has almost superhuman powers. But when you put him in with the Avengers, suddenly he has to become a superhero or something and act more like one. And I could barely stand to read those comics. They're probably well written, well drawn. I just thought the idea was wrong. Conan should be Conan, and that's why I would almost never allow, during my 10 years in the 70s, I would almost never allow Conan to appear in any modern day story or to guest star with any heroes. even when I brought him into the 20th century, it was a what if story.
Yeah.
And he didn't meet any other heroes. They only did stuff like that after I was gone.
Right. Yeah, I think they had a Conan versus Wolverine what if story, if I'm not mistaken.
Mercifully never read that.
we won't spoil it for you in case you decide to go back.
It's all right. Wolverine, great. Wolverine's a wonderful character, and I'm happy to have had a hand in creating him. And Conan's a great character, and I'm happy to have had a hand in developing him for comics. But they don't belong in the same universe. Wolverine would destroy Conan, And to do anything different is like having a battle between Batman and Superman and pretending that somehow Batman can win, unless he has kryptonite.
Well, that's strike two, because I'm a Batman fan, so it's The Spy Who Loved Me and Batman now.
Yeah, but Batman can be a great character. It doesn't mean he can beat Superman. He's great within his own realm. He could be an even better character. I mean, my feeling is that, Superman is the ultimate superhero because everything else flowed from him. But Batman's a great character. But, you have Batman and Superman. And unless you weight the thing in some way or other, Batman's got no chance, whether it's Frank Miller drawing it or anybody else,
And what, just a couple more questions. Last one, working with your wife, Dan Thomas, working with her on a lot of things. My wife and I can barely agree on where to go for dinner. When you two are sitting down to write stuff, how has the collaboration worked for the two of you?
Pretty close to you and your wife.
Okay.
No, we don't. We work together fairly well, but we used to fight a lot. And despite the fact that she was kind of a beginner and hardly read comics, let alone, written any. But once she began to work on them, she got a really vested interest in them. And then when I'd change a few words that she didn't agree with, or if I'd missed something, or if I'd changed something and she thought I had missed something, we'd have really, knockdown, drag out fights about it. I mean, I obviously always had the authority, but at the same time, I respected her opinion. But, I was just surprised how unpleasant it could become because, it just shows you when you get a couple of creative people together, even though my wife had no particular interest in a creative career, I just kind of dragged her into it. So I got what I deserved, really. And she was very good at it. She came up with a lot of good, very good ideas and so forth. But after a few years, she began to weary of it. She never really wanted to do it anyway. And when I went to Marvel, she said, well, those characters better than I do. So from then on, for those last few years in the 90s, she would kind of, her name's on a lot of stories, but she never wrote a word of dialogue. She would just sort of talk over the stories with me. And some of the characters are hers or mine or some combinations. And so she contributed quite a bit. But she just never really had an interest in a comic book career like I did. She was just helping me out. What happened is I got her started when we were going to go on our belated honeymoon in 81. I had her type out a plot while I was working for one of the comics at DC while I was working on the other. And I kind of roped her in. I said, if you can do the plot, you can do a little dialogue and I'll rewrite it, this and that. And I sort of, eased her into it. Next thing you know, she's a full-fledged comic writer and not really wanting to be. So she got out of it eventually.
Very cool. And again, Planet Comic Con with Roy Thomas. I know John's great keeping your website updated and all your Facebook stuff so people can keep up with
John
Roy
Cimino.
Thomas.
Gotta use his last
John Cimino, exactly.
Name.
And I love the podcast, too. Thanks very much for your time today. Have a great con.
Thank you. We'll try. I'm glad to be here in Kansas City.
There he goes, Roy Thomas. Just a fantastic individual. And like I said, outside of Stan Lee, there is nobody more knowledgeable about Marvel Comics. The guy is an encyclopedia of information. All the characters he created. If you ever get the chance to meet him, please take that chance. Go talk to him. Get some stuff signed. I got some really cool stuff signed by him when I was there. And Planet Comic Con has a lot of cool people in their new lineup coming next year. They've already announced Ian McDiarmid, the Emperor, Sith Lord Sidious, for crying out loud. They've got a lot of cool people on the docket already. They've got Keith David. Are you kidding me? So check out planetcomiccon.com. They're not a sponsor of ours or anything, but they do put on a great show. So make sure to check them out. They're coming up March 8th through the 10th, and tickets are on sale now. Go check out their guest lineup. You're probably going to want to go, especially if you're in the greater St. Louis area here, because it's just a four-hour trip by car to head out there. So always a good time, and I appreciate them letting us have that interview with Roy Thomas. And, of course, John Cimino, Roy's agent, set that up for us, too. So we appreciate John very much. We're going to take another commercial break. When we come back, we are going to have Nick Zano and Shelley Hennig on talking about their new Netflix series, Obliterated. Please stand by.
Fantastic Four! Hello, everyone. This is Paul Soles, voice of Spider-Man and Ermy, the Misfit Elf, wanted to be a dentist on Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Coming to you on Geek to Me Radio. Hope you enjoy. Talk with you soon.
Here comes the Spider-Man.
Welcome back. Hopefully, as you've been listening, you've now got all your Christmas presents wrapped and you're getting ready to put them under the tree. I've got to get back to doing that myself because I'm a last-minute kind of dude. Hopefully, also, you were able to get out and enjoy the beautiful city of St. Charles during this festive holiday season. Today, Christmas Eve, was their last day that they were out there. They've been going all month long, ever since the day after Thanksgiving, and so many people came out. We had... It was incredible. Ashley Eckstein, the voice of Ahsoka Tano herself, and her husband, former Cardinal player David Eckstein, were out there in St. Charles. I got to see them and say hi to them. It was really cool. But there's just so many people came out this season. We had some great weather for it. Whether you got your picture taken with Krampus on Friday nights for Krampusnacht, whether or not you got to do the Victorian walkthrough of A Christmas Carol on Wednesday nights and interact with Ebenezer Scrooge, Tiny Tim, and the Cratchit family, or whether you went out on a Saturday and Sunday to see the Santa Parade and listen to the Fife and Drum Corps play and, you know, ask what you wanted for Christmas from La Befana or Santa Lucia or Father Christmas or Père Noël. It was a fantastic season, and they're going to do it again next year because guess what? Next year is their 50th anniversary of Christmas tradition. That is incredible. The largest and longest running Christmas festival in the country. So if for some reason you did not get a chance to go out this past season, put it on your calendar now. It always starts the day after Thanksgiving and runs through Christmas Eve. And next year is a lot of cool things in store for their big 50th anniversary. You are not going to want to miss out on this. It's going to be their biggest yet. Probably their best yet. I say that every year because somehow they find a way to top it. But if you are looking for something different to do, especially those of you listening outside the greater St. Louis, St. Charles area, if you're hearing this in the podcast form and you want a different and unique Christmas experience, this is going to be the one you're going to want to check out. Their 50th anniversary of Christmas traditions. And of course, there's always something going on in the city of St. Charles. If you don't believe me, check out the website, discoverstcharles.com. That's discoverstcharles.com. You might be more of a hardcore Halloween fan. Come check out Legends and Lanterns then in October. That is a huge amount of fun. It's the sister festival for Christmas traditions. And you can go out there and you can sing karaoke with Phantom of the Opera. You can get axe swinging lessons from Lizzie Borden. You can hang out with the Queen of Hearts. You can follow the angry villagers around as they try to chase out all the ghouls and goblins in Main Street. A lot of fun during that festival as well. But like I said, there's always something going on. Even when there's not something going on, my goodness, it's the place to visit if you're in the greater St. Louis, St. Charles area. Again, go for a new restaurant. Maybe you're tired of the same old in your neighborhood. Go check out St. Charles. All the great things they have there along the streets of St. Charles with all the different restaurants, or right there on South and North Main, bunch of restaurants up and down there. And of course, these are all small businesses. They're independently owned and you're helping these businesses out, especially in this economy. That's very important. Make your plans now. Start at the website, whether you're near or far, wherever you are. You check out the website, St. Charles. Their main website is, of course, discoverstcharles.com. That's discoverstcharles.com. As we always say, it's an historically good time. My final interview of the night, Nick Zano and Shelley Hennig from Obliterated on Netflix. Let's get into it. Right now we're talking with Shelley Hennig and Nick Zano about Obliterated, brand new show on Netflix, just came out. If you haven't seen it yet, you are missing some high-octane fun. Thank you both for your time this morning.
Good morning. Good
morning, James.
I was so interested to see this. It's in my mind, as I'm watching this, I keep thinking it's like the TV show Alias meets the movie The Hangover. It's got that kind of level of action-packed, thrilling spy stuff, but with that underlying humor that just you don't see in too many other TV shows. If you would talk a little bit, and we'll start with Shelley, about how you got attached to the project.
Oh, yeah. I was in the middle of doing night shoots on another film when this audition came in with five other auditions in one day, which is a very rare situation. And I only had time. I had to pick a couple of them. There was no way I was going to be able to do them all. So I was kind of just looking at the roles. I, at the time, just wanted to do my next project I just wanted to do a comedy. And I saw a CIA agent, and I just assumed that it was a drama or procedural. So I actually passed on this project. And then 2 months later, I was having dinner with a friend in L.A., and was telling him how I was going to take a mini break, and he said, how have you not tested or heard about this show, Obliterated? It's the funniest thing I've read in years. And I looked through my email, and I was like, oh, man, I passed on it. Dad, was that dumb? And I looked further, and I saw, like, the guys at Cobra Kai and a Netflix straight-to-series, and I was like, I am actually the dumbest person on Earth. And then very last minute, I threw in a tape, and then the rest is history. And I'm just so, I would have been so mad, because I would have tuned into this show. I mean, I've seen the marketing everywhere. It's for me. It's my vibe. And I would have been humiliated. I would have been so upset. So luckily, we're having a different conversation today.
Hey, Shelly, you just made me think about this. The show is totally for you.
Right?
I know.
I don't know how I feel about that, but thank you.
It's true.
Nick, same question about Geek. How'd you get attached?
Oh, I got the script one day, and I was flying to London to see some friends. And on my way there, I read it on the plane. And I am a romantic and sentimental fool when I'm flying for some reason. And I read it, and I liked it. I thought it was hilarious. And, like, McKnight's voice was there the first time I read it. Everything was there the first time I read it, but I also talked about, like, I may be just a Nick on a flight mode. So landed the plane, went home, gave it another read, and it was better than it was on the plane. And I was like, I need to do this. I needed to blow off some steam creatively. And I know the John Josh Hayden, I know their pedigree. And their pedigree is Harold and Kumar and American Reunion and The Hot Tub Time Machine. And I know they were most likely needing to blow off some steam as well, creatively. And it worked out. And I promised them early on, I was like, I will not cheat you during this experience. Like, I need to do this for me. And I can't wait to get to it. And the experience was like everything that I hoped it could have been. They picked an extraordinary cast, and we had the best time.
That's one of the things I was struck from the very first episode, is I feel like this is a cast, you guys have been good friends for like the past 10 years, and you decided to do a series together. Having that kind of insane chemistry right there from the get-go, I think is kind of weird for a cast. Even shows like Seinfeld, you kind of build up, but this, you all hit the ground running first episode. What do you attribute that, do you think?
I know the exact answer to that. It was the first day we were all together in Albuquerque. And we went to do a rehearsal for a scene, and everyone was talking about where they picked a place, scrambling to live. And somehow we got into Shelley's Rent. And Shelley's Rent became a chant. Like, we started chanting about Shelley's Rent in the first 10 minutes. And from that point on, we're like, okay, and everybody's good.
Yeah, we were heckling each other right off the bat, and including when Nick and I met over Zoom. I was in Ireland filming, and Nick and I Zoomed, and I was making fun of the headband he was wearing. To be fair, he was growing out his hair for to play McKnight, but I just went in, and it just I don't know. I think some luck there, but I think they just cast actors that were so ready for this, and Nick nailed it with, like, not holding back. I actually met John and Hayden maybe, would that be, like, 12, 15 years ago at this point, and I was testing with Chris Klein for American Reunion, and my character was on drugs, and I remember they were like, do whatever you want, like, just go for it. And then I left, and my manager called. He's like, how'd it go? And I was like, oh, it was great. They were really nice. I humped a chair. My manager was like, what? And I was like, well, I mean, they didn't ask me to do that, but, like, the character was on Molly, and that's just what happened. And my manager actually uses that as, like, a barometer for me with my auditions, meaning, like, don't hold back. Like, you have nothing to lose. And that was my first encounter with them. And it makes sense. because here we are with Obliterated, and you could not hold back. And it's so interesting that this cast got along so well, and no one held back. And it could have felt unsafe, you know? It could have...
Sure.
It's impossible with Josh and Hayden and this cast and even the crew, obviously. It just... We just went for it, and everyone was down, and I think you could see it reflected in the show.
It's interesting that my show covers pop culture. We cover all sorts of TV and movies, but Stephanie, you are the 11th alumni from Days of Our Lives I've had somehow. It's just that show is so ubiquitous, and you had a fantastic run as Stephanie Johnson. I was a little upset when you and Nathan Horton broke up, but that's just me. But it's so fascinating.
Oh, my God.
That
Nathan
they're...
Horton. Wow. That's a throwback.
There's so many great people who've come through that show.
They don't care if I'm on it or not.
It's so good. And I think the fact that there are so many actors who I've had on my show who have been on Days of Our Lives just is a testament to how many great actors have gone through that show.
There's another one. Oh, I'm blanking right now. But he's on Obliterated.
Yes, Yvonne.
Oh, man.
Yvonne Javera.
Yes.
Wait, who? Who is that?
I can't think of his character's name, but his real name is Yvonne Javera. Obviously.
The guy with the ear.
Yes, the guy with the ear. And then,
phenomenal.
And then, Nick, you did Final Destination with Billy Reed, Krista Allen. So, again, there's that Days of Our Lives connection once again. I just want to point it out.
Oh, right.
Ooh, nicely done, James.
I noticed one of the shots you have where you're both holding your guns. I didn't realize it until the way you're holding it. Nick, I guess you're left-handed, just the way you were holding your gun in one shot?
Indeed, which it was a bit of a situation at times when we were doing tactical training. Most firearms and weapons are designed for right-handed people.
Sure.
And there's just a few things you can adjust to make the gun ambidextrous. And during our tactical training with the great Kevin Kent, a la Kevin Kent, he and I worked on, you know, it's just different doing everything left-handed. And on the day we had a scene where I drop a magazine and I reload, that gun I was working with, or that rifle I was working with, disappeared, and I had a different rifle. So we worked up to this one point where Trunk and McKnight shoot a bad guy, and I had a weapon I've never used before, and it was during a take, and I was like, you know, we want to look like we know what we're doing, and I remember getting it. And I looked at Kevin, and Kevin goes, well, shit happened. Like, all right.
So, Kevin.
Yeah. So we go to do it, and we have explosions going everywhere. And then for the first time on camera during the take, I drop the clip, and I pop in a new one. And I, through the act of God, it worked out. And when it was over, I was high as a kite on adrenaline, and I walked over to Kevin, and Kevin goes, badass, and that was it.
I know we're near the end of our time. I did put out that I'm going to have you both on the show, and I got a lot of love for both of you on my Twitter feed. People were asking questions. My last question before we go is people are clamoring. So many people ask, when's season two coming? When's season two, and where is it going to be set? My hope, and I'm sure Shelley would agree, that the next one is set in my very favorite city in the continental United States, New Orleans, Louisiana.
My mom would love that.
Is there any? Do you know anything about season two at all that you could share? Is there? Do we have anything detail wise that's not going to get you both in trouble?
Yeah, I mean, there absolutely could be a season two, and with the show being number three globally right now, who knows? Maybe there's a big chance. But I did. We heard that it would be potentially someplace tropical.
So maybe we'll get that Fiji one
and
that
we are totally down.
That Chad McKnight wanted after all. We'll get it with shooting Fiji.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be a dream. We're open for any major tropical place, sending Shelley and I there to scout it for location.
Yeah, we're ready. Our bags are packed. I mean, I kind of don't live anywhere anyway, so
right.
I kind of need that, Nick. I'm glad.
The island of Kauai is very nice. I mean, it's good enough for Jurassic Park. I think Obliterated Season 2 would do well there. Just saying.
Great.
Shelley Hennig, Nick Zano, I appreciate your time so much today. I could have talked to you for another hour, but I appreciate the time. And if you're listening right now, check out Obliterated, now streaming on Netflix. Thank you both. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.
That's going to do it. Another show in the books. My thanks to Roy Thomas and his manager, John Cimino, for that interview. Nick Zano and Shelley Hennig, Obliterated on Netflix. Check it out. Of course, check it out without the kids. I'm just saying, a lot goes on. It's not something you want the kids to see. This would be one you, after the kids are in bed, you check out Obliterated on Netflix. It's a lot of fun, though. So make sure to check that out. And of course, thanks as always to Joey V, without whom I would not still be doing this show. He is the man behind me who gets everything done, and I appreciate everything he does very much. And of course, you, the listener, thank you so, so much for listening, for tuning in, and for checking us out each and every week, even this week on Christmas Eve. One more show of the year to go. Make sure you check that one out. I'm doing a show on New Year's Eve. It won't be live. It'll be pre-recorded like this, but it is a new show. So if you want a pregame before you head out to New Year's parties, check us out New Year's Eve. Until next week, my friends.
It's not in the way you watch I sound be. It's not in the way you watch the flash. It's not in the way you love Scotty Young Art. It's not in the way you play Mario Kart. It's not in the way you look when you make Game of Thrones references. That's a show. This is Geek To Me Radio. That's a show.
Thank you, Las Vegas. Good night.
Hey, kids. Are your parents about to buy you a shiny new toy from Amazon?
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
Well, don't be selfish. Share some of that money with us. Before going on Amazon, make sure to type in bit.ly/geektome in the web browser. It will look just like Amazon.com, except it'll say referral Geek To Me Radio up top. And then when you check out, a tiny percentage will go to support the show without costing you 1 cent more. So before your parents get you that gizmo, gadget, or widget, make sure they type in bit.ly/geektome in the web browser.
bit.ly/geektome bit.ly/geektome